Welcome to the latest episode of The Grower and The Economist. I'm Michelle Klieger, The Economist.
And I'm Peter Kanjoyan, The Grower.
Each week, we team up to tackle the biggest challenges facing small and medium-sized growers. We're one part grower and one part economist, just like your business.
I've been looking at and considering a podcast for Greenhouse Grower for probably back prior to the pandemic. And it's just kind of one of those things where I would think about it, and then the process of getting it started, I knew that was going to be more of a challenge than actually, you know, once it got rolling. But then, you know, something else would come up, and then I'd put it on the back burner, and then I'd try to revisit it, and again, and you know how the cycle goes, until it was last year where we decided, okay, we need to get this off the ground. So we put together a pretty formalized plan, and you know, really, you know, we went through, you know, how long are they going to be? Who's going to be? What's going to be the focus? What's the frequency? We ultimately decided we wanted to make it talking to growers about grower issues for growers. That's really what it comes down to, is, you know, chatting with growers of all sizes from across the industry, with a focus probably on floriculture for the most part, but kind of just looking at some of the challenges that they're dealing with, opportunities, lessons learned, what they have planned for the future, what they're excited about, et cetera. We launched in August of this past year. I was hoping to have it ready by Cultivate, but that didn't quite work out. We wanted to start out strong, so we were able to feature both Art and Abe Van Wingerden and Metrolina in separate conversations, figure, you know, two of the biggest known names in the industry to really come out with a bang. And since then, you know, the feedback's been positive. You know, I was looking at our number. We're about 16 or 17 episodes in right now. And I'm looking at our numbers. We're averaging around, you know, 700 downloads or so per episode, which puts us right in the top 10% of all podcasts, which was kind of surprising with all the podcasts that are out there. But you figure for every one that has a big audience, there's like 20 that, you know, kind of come and go. So so it's exciting so far.
That sounds really great, Brian, and congratulations on the successful launch of it. How long have you been at Greenhouse Grower and Meister now?
So Greenhouse Grower I've been with since about the beginning of 2016. I started at Meister in 2000, working on our American Fruit Grower magazine, and was on that brand for about 14 years. That covers the outdoor fruit and vegetable fruit market, so apples, stone fruit, wine grapes, tree nuts, and worked closely with the editorial team on our American Vegetable Grower magazine as well, which covers the outdoor vegetable industry. It was about 2014 or so when I moved over to, at the time we had a brand that focused on the retail garden center market, today's Garden Center magazine. I worked on that for a couple of years, and we wound up having to close that brand down. And then from there, moved over to Greenhouse Grower, and have had several different roles on Greenhouse Grower since then. I guess the two main focuses up until I've kind of gotten to be where I am now is on digital content and on technology are kind of the two areas I've really tried to put the most focus on.
So you've been around long enough, Brian, to, well, I'm amazed at how the vehicles we're using to deliver education are changing and evolving. And you spending most of your career in print media, I'm sure you feel similarly, and having launched a podcast, you can speak to how you're changing, you're evolving, Meister's doing the same.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, for the first few years, it was, you go through the cycle of, you write content for a monthly magazine, when it's all written, you lay it out, you get the magazine ready for printing, it goes off to the printer, and then you start the process over again. You know, it was after a few years, we started to, you know, put our feet, our toes in the water for e-newsletters, and we launched websites, but, you know, they were just very basic at the time, like everybody's was. But since then, I mean, sometimes I almost think of it as, we've got all these different platforms, and oh, by the way, there's also this monthly print magazine to do. I mean, right now, I mean, in addition to the monthly magazine, we've got, you know, newsletters that go out 4 or 5 times a week, websites being updated multiple times daily with content, the podcast you mentioned, YouTube videos, and that's, you know, that doesn't even include getting out to different events and talking to folks in the industry. Just, you know, just there are so many different ways to get information now. And, you know, one of the things that we really try and focus on is trying to be platform agnostic and really looking at, you know, whatever type, you know, article idea or content idea that we have, and then kind of sort through how can we put it out there in different ways to different folks in through different paths. So, you know, what you see in print isn't necessarily going to be the same thing that you see on the website. You know, a good example that I'll give you is a couple of years ago at Cultivate, we gave our industry achievement award to Dr. Charlie Hall, Texas A&M. And, you know, typically after that, we would do, you know, a profile in the magazine and we'd be kind of done with it. So I sat down with Charlie, and if you both know Charlie, I mean, he can talk, and which is great. He can talk a lot. We had so much good content from that discussion that we ran something short in print, and then we turned it into a 6-part series on our website. So that's just, I think, one example of taking one idea and looking at so many different ways to put it out there. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's keeping up with that now is it's one of our biggest challenges right now, because everybody gets information in different ways. You don't want to focus too much on one area. You don't want to leave something out of one area that might be missed too. Yeah. So there's no perfect way to do that anymore.
And Michelle, you're advising me to use that same approach in terms of, I'm used to, Brian, writing an article, being done with the topic. And Michelle's saying, no, you can shape it into all different lengths and sizes and shorts and longs. And old dog, new tricks. I'm hoping to, take that advice and run with it.
Yeah.
So do you find that different people use the different channel, or do people get the information from you in multiple ways?
I'm going to say all the above. There are folks who just look at the magazine. There are folks that we know who have never once seen our magazine. We're finding with the podcast, people are just finding it through their various podcast platforms too. So that's kind of where it goes back to. You don't want to miss somebody who you might be reaching in different ways. I think today, you know, as you look at, you know, who the next generation is coming into the industry, certainly they're I think more focused on getting information, you know, from their phones, et cetera. You know, one thing we have seen is that, you know, unlike I think in other industries where print is really struggling, you know, we don't have the same size magazines that we used to have 10, 15 years ago, but print is still one of our most viable platforms. It's never going to go away for this market, I think.
Well, and as I said, I've listened to your podcast. I really enjoyed it. I also like podcasts that is an opportunity for you to listen in on somebody who's having an interesting conversation. And I definitely get the feel of that. So many of the guests that you interview are not people that I am fortunate enough to get to talk to. And so being able to sit in that room, it just, to me, feels like I'm getting information in a very personal way, that wall between me and the expert is so much thinner. And for me, that's why I enjoy podcasts. Not that I don't enjoy the newspaper or the magazine, but it just feels very formal. And like I'm getting that chunk of what you're looking for, or able to fit in. And I think that's multiplied in talking to Peter, because now he's like, oh, they said I only get 800 words, but I have this whole website that I can do whatever I want with, and I can say everything. And so those opportunities to really dig in on something that you're passionate about and or get to talk to people that you don't get to talk to in life are personally why I like the different mediums.
Well, and you use the word conversation there, I think, and that's the word that I use whenever I bring this up. When I schedule a call like this with somebody, I want to make it clear right from the beginning. This is not a formal interview where I have these specific questions. We're going to go through those and that's going to be it. I send over a list of, you know, some questions, some talking points, but let's let the conversation grow organically. As topics come up, there's no limit in terms of what we can talk about. So as you said, it's that whole conversation and really getting to know somebody or some company on a much more personal level than just, you know, here's the straight down bullet points of what this company does.
Yeah. Yep. Letting a conversation unfold organically, Brian. Yeah, there's such value in that. Rather than the listener being lectured to, you know, right, like Michelle said, they're sitting in on the conversation. That's really cool.
I will say that I have lectured a lot of 18-year-olds at 8 o'clock in the morning and watched them fall asleep. So that is the exact opposite I'm going for on a podcast.
Right. Well, and I'm kind of like you. I mean, I listen to so many different podcasts myself, you know, both in this industry and just for things that I'm personally interested in. And what I like about them too is, you know, every format's different. You have these individual conversations, you have, you know, discussions amongst groups of people, and, you know, even the just getting away from this industry for a second, I love trivia. So I listen to about half a dozen different trivia focused podcasts. And again, they're all different. So just keeps things entertaining, I think.
But Brian, with some of your recent conversations, what are one or two or three challenges that you're sensing growers, greenhouse operators are facing this year, this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll go back to the standard is going to be labor. You know, that comes up in every conversation that we have, both in terms of, you know, availability. And then once you have a team in place, being able to retain your high quality employees at a time, you know, when there is a lot of turnover, you know, between this market and others. Cost management from so many different angles is one of the big things that we're hearing a lot of. I'll tell you right now, one of the biggest things that I'm personally focused on right now is, so we do our annual top 100 growers list every year for Greenhouse Grower that comes out every May. We do a survey of our audience, and it starts with your square footage size, and then that leads into questions covering a wide range of topics from, you know, crop shifts to production challenges, technology investment, labor, transportation, et cetera. The industry sizes right now, there were a lot of growers last year who told us that their square footage didn't really change much from 22 into 2023 for a couple of reasons. One being there were lingering supply chain issues that folks were still trying to sort through. And then just the question of, you know, we gained all these consumers during the pandemic. Are they really going to stick around? So I think there was some hesitancy to grow at that point, but a lot of growers were telling us that, you know, once these market circumstances start to ease a little bit, we're planning for what we hope will be more growth. We're seeing that going into this year. I'm looking, our survey is still active right now, so we're looking at the size of these operations, and I'd say most of them are on the rise in terms of square footage size. What is really jumping out to me this year, though, is you've also had a high number of operations shutting down. You kind of started later in the year, in late 2023, we heard of a couple longtime family-run companies who mainly do, I'd say, to not having the next generation able to step in and lead the company, have had to close their doors. Then as you get into the beginning of this year, other growers were shutting down for different reasons, energy and labor costs, and just dealing with, you know, local and state, you know, restrictions on overtime and on labor and et cetera. We heard from another grower that, you know, their lending organization or lending company who've been in this industry for a while decided they didn't want to be a part of this market. And so they pulled their funding for the company, and, you know, they were kind of, you know, they were had very few options at that point. So we're really trying to address that head on. You know, again, bigger companies closing for different reasons, and, you know, trying to figure out, oh, what can other growers do to avoid being in the situation. So, you know, our May issue, which is going to be almost entirely top 100 focused, is going to really dig into that, not from a, you know, woe is me standpoint, but, you know, how do you stay resilient? How do you navigate these challenges that the growers, really of all growers of all size, face? But, you know, I know at one of our conferences we did a couple of years ago, Peter, you and Michelle both spoke about, you know, in the case of the growers that you talk to, small and mid-sized growers, that ability to pivot when conditions dictate that you need to do so. Sometimes it's easier for a grower who's that size to be able to make those decisions versus if you're a big company that's got a lot of resources focused on one area and you lose that, what do you do?
Yeah.
So those are just a few of the things that we're really focusing on right now.
That analogy of trying to change course with an aircraft carrier versus a little tugboat.
Yeah.
Michelle, how many times over the recent years have you and I tried to address that question Brian brought up? How much of the gain through the pandemic was going to be permanent and stick with us? We've tried to talk about that a few times, right?
Yeah, and when Brian said it, I was kind of thinking about the evolution throughout our episodes. So you and I talking about it and the percentage of local food available being at 3% and how much higher could it get, thinking about Dr. Bridget Behe and this is our game to lose because we've seen so much growth and people are excited and here's our chance to really stick with it. into last year on, you know, now it's kind of a lagging indicator. The sales numbers are coming up now. You know, we've had our chance to encourage people to stick with this industry and continue to grow. And how did we fare? And if we can't manage the recession cycles and the pandemic cycle, how do we continue to grow as an industry? But it's good timing with the, you know, with the coming out of those top 100 growers. I think that there's always this, you know, envy of the outside that's not in that group of all the shiny tools and how great it would be and so forth. But it's also, it's hard to listen to the reasons why people go out of businesses and, you know, the advantages of being able to pivot at times, especially when there's disruptions. I mean, when things are going well, being the big and efficient player is a huge advantage. When there's shifts and turbulence, sometimes it's easy to be smaller because you get that. But this idea of not having the next generation, I think, is a huge discussion. I mean, it's up there with labor, right? I don't think that there's an ag conversation where we're not talking about who the next generation is. And I think the next census of agriculture is going to push the average age of farmers, operators, from about 58 to 64 or so. So, like, this is a problem that's not getting better. And the longer you have operators stay in place, the less mm-hmm. likely the next generation is to step up because they've gone and found something else to do. So now you have this new knowledge gap, and taking it back to podcasts and educational and resources, the next generation that takes over might not have the farming or production background that we're used to main operators having. And so how do we build that up and offer those resources so they're ready to take over these businesses?
It's not an easy conversation to have. I mean, and it's one of those that you put it off and put it off, frankly, until it's too late sometimes. And I think that's when you get into these types of situations. You know, it's interesting. You talked about, you know, who the next generation is and having that experience in running a business. I like when I talk to growers and, you know, they'll talk about their kids who are coming up in the company. A lot of them that I've heard will encourage, you know, their sons or daughters, whoever, to, if they're going to school, maybe get a horticulture degree, but maybe get a degree in economics or marketing, and then get some experience off the farm, off the greenhouse for a few years, then come back to the company when you're ready. You'll have that institutional knowledge that you had growing up within the greenhouse, but then you've also got that knowledge about how to run a business the right way and you know, stuff like that to keep things going. So again, it's not an easy conversation. We look at, you know, like I told you at the beginning of the conversation, I focus a lot on digital content. That includes looking at metrics for where people, what stories are resonating most on our website. And you look at, you know, it's a sad fact that when we post content on succession planning, it doesn't get the traffic, but that's because, again, it's not an easy subject to talk about. But if you don't deal with it and then it gets to be too late, then, you know, your company's going to be in trouble, I think.
That's a great point, Brian. Hey, you guys, I'm going to date stamp this part of the conversation generationally. And Brian, what you just put into words about parents and their children and encouraging them to look outside, that's nothing new. That's exactly how my parents approached me in my career. And it was my mother that said, when an opportunity for graduate school came up, where at every step or every degree, guys, all I wanted to do was come back to the family farm and run the greenhouse operation. And I remember her saying, go see what the world has to offer. We'll be here. We will always be here. You can always come back. And and truer words never spoken. I'm so glad that I, you know, got out to see what our industry was like on a national level, and then ended up coming back. So, and Brian, for decades, we'd put succession planning on the short course program, the old OFA program. And no, they were not the most highly attended, but the evaluations for those who came were, thank you, this was great, we need more of this. Yeah. So, and you know, a lot of times tails wag dogs, and it's only the very popular, heavily attended sessions that draw a lot of buzz, or the article in the magazine that gets the most reads, but we have to make sure that we keep everything in perspective. And you were talking a few minutes ago about top 100s, Brian, and costs and how they're dealing with some of these economic challenges. I'm in the middle of an article, and just yesterday, wordsmithing a paragraph toward small growers saying, look, we all like to get quantity discounts, but don't get 10 units of something just to get the discount if it's going to take you 4 years to use those units. If you only need three of them this year, pay the longer dollar in the long run. The economist, like Michelle, is probably going to say it's not wise to tie up all that money.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting too, you know, I listened to one of your recent episodes with the gentleman from Priva, and you know, that's one thing that we really look at too is, you know, the large growers have the ability to make these investments in technology, but, you know, there are so many small and mid-sized operations who are just as innovative, if not more, maybe just don't have the financial means to make a huge investment. But I really like when I talk to somebody who's in the greenhouse technology space, and their focus is on providing solutions for growers of all sizes. And they'll really promote that. You know, if you're this size and up, we've got this model of, you know, transplanter or potting line for you. If you're at this size, we've got this for you. If you're like at this size, here's another different option. Those are very refreshing conversations when we get a chance to have those.
Yeah. You know, as far as technology goes and the trickle down of technology, I'm on a NASA text board where whenever the ISS is flying over Andover and it's at the right time of day, I get a text saying, you know, at 5:40 in the morning, look at this degree up at southwest to northeast. So, and I find myself waving to the astronauts and I'm saying, thank you, NASA, for inventing cordless tools. I've got a cabinet full of DeWalt cordless tools here that I wouldn't have if it wasn't for you.
Oh, yeah.
So that trickle down is so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing how from different angles, the small and the large parts of the industry push everybody forward. And so, you know, you've got these large investments and you've got outside experts and all of that on the big farms or big operations, and they can, you know, make case studies and do these trainings and have, you know, junior staff that might not move up far enough. And so they go lead a smaller operation and like you see the information kind of move forward and out. And then you've also got it on the smaller sides of how do they make do without these different technologies? How do they stay competitive? How do they, you know, connect with their customers, or how do they find these right size businesses to have an impact? And we see a lot of small companies grow up and get purchased by big companies. And so it comes from both ways. And I think that it's an important conversation where we want the industry to keep evolving, whether it's, you know, reducing its environmental footprint, having a better return on investment, keeping these family businesses around, having consumers love the product more. And it takes all of us to kind of make those changes a reality. And it doesn't come from just one part of the industry.
It was interesting. There was a panel discussion at Cultivate last year that touched on that exact same thing. They had three growers of varying sizes. I'll say small, medium, large. They each talked about how they approach automation, and they all do just to different levels. There were a lot more commonalities, I'd say, than what I was expecting coming into it. But then the other thing I'll say too is, you know, what I really appreciate the larger operations that also recognize that a rising tide lifts all boats. And make sure I get that phrase right.
Yeah.
Those who are willing to go out there and talk to everybody from across the industry and offer their advice on, you know, here's some of the steps that you can be taking. Here's how we calculate return on investment. Here's how we decide when we're going to add technology, how it makes the most sense for our greenhouse layout or for our team, and how do we make our team better by adding some piece of new equipment. The growers who are willing to go out there and talk about their experiences so that others can learn from them and highlight the fact that, you know, you might not be at the same size we are, but there you can still take a lot of these similar steps and become more efficient regardless of your scale as a company.
Well, and we had a conversation earlier this year, Peter, with when private sector does research versus when public sector does research and how they complement each other. And it's the same thing. The research generally helps. And so sometimes it does come from a university and it comes from an established department. And sometimes the overhead and processes doesn't make sense. And going to somebody recently called them directional schools to me. So you're not looking at your, university of, but it's University of Northwest. And you get that more practical hands-on research done and training done, or you go to a private person. But again, we need these different venues because they're able to excel at different things. An independent researcher might be able to pick up something that is cutting edge that's going to take a multi-year review process to get through the university. And so in order to keep evolving, we need those different players.
Our January issue this year was all about the future of floriculture from different angles. So that's one of the articles that we actually had in there, was all about how you're seeing more partnerships between the commercial sector and the research sector, because really they both need it. You know, the research institutions, I mean, as you know well, Peter, don't have the funding to go out and do a lot of this research anymore. There's a lot of expertise at the commercial level. And as long as you can make it so it's non-biased, it's practical information, it's only going to better the industry if you see those types of partnerships.
Brian, you mentioned that Cultivate session last year that had small, medium, and large growers speaking on the program. Mm. I'm enjoying a History Channel series called The Food That Built America.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you guys, some of the iconic brands were started by one-person operations. A woman in her kitchen, whether it's chicken wings or pizza sauce. This week it was on the soft drink industry that's such a conglomerate, but it all started in a drugstore by one person. And it's, I think, Brian, there's a little false view of the industry that all of the innovation comes from the top down. Yeah. And I think you made a really good point. That panel, everybody learns from everyone. And some of the innovators can be very small growers and farmers.
Yeah, innovation is not dictated by the size of your operation by any means.
Yep. Let's shift gears for a few minutes, Brian. I've had the pleasure of knowing you for a number of years now through your career, been able to watch you rise. If I ask you, what are your favorite moments or experiences? What have you grown to love about agriculture or floriculture from your perch as a media expert?
I love that question. It's interesting because, our parent company, Meister Media, he has a full team of editors covering the horticulture and other specialty crop markets. We don't require anybody coming in with knowledge of those industries, though. You kind of go in and you learn as just by going out and talking to growers, attending trade shows, visiting growers at their farms. And, I like the willingness to communicate, and I can walk into any operation. I can talk to somebody and learn anything I want to, but I can also, I don't have to feel afraid to say, I'm not exactly familiar with how this works. Can you explain it a little more? And sometimes when you say that, you can see the excitement sometimes. They're like, I get to talk about how something works, because everybody else who visits us, either they don't care or they're already familiar with it. So being able to have those types of conversations is nice. I think now, again, going back to the different platforms that I focus on, to intermix the market with the media, is that's why I like focusing on digital. And this is not to downplay print or anything like that, but there's so many infinite possibilities, content ideas, length, frequency, audience. It's all there, and you can go in and you can see, who's reading what content, how long are they staying on your page, where are they clicking once they get to your website, are they clicking on this story, are they clicking on this story, what are the topics that are the most resonant. And that's one thing that we try to do internally is, you can look at the numbers all you want and say, okay, this is popular or this is not so popular. What are we doing in response to that? So, we've got a few tools now that we can identify keywords and phrases that, going through a search engine like Google, there's a lot of interest in, but we may not necessarily have the content for. And then we can say, okay, who are we going to reach out to in the industry to provide some of that content? Or if it's something that we've already, had published before, what can we do to make any updates to it or just share it more? One small example is we just earlier this year launched what we're calling digital deep dives. And it's essentially, it's a once a month downloadable PDF that's focused on a specific topic. It's no new content. We take content that we've developed probably in the past 2 or 3 years to give it some timeliness, package it all together into one report and just push that out to the industry and say, if you want to learn more about, automation, or the next one is insect control, for example, if you want to learn more, here's just a few resources that you can find all in one place. But yeah, it's just, being able to just identify a topic and then identify all the various platforms and ways that you can reach your audience. Because as we said so many times in this conversation, everybody gets information differently. And it's very exciting, I think.
Well, you said you loved the question, but I can tell that you loved the answer. The animation level in your voice for these last 2 minutes, Brian, and congratulations. That's all great stuff to see. So I come from that family business, family grower part of it where, our emotion is on our sleeve. We kind of live, eat, and breathe our businesses. And it's really nice. I've enjoyed over my career meeting people like you that are in the supply chain or in education. There are a few of my colleagues that I would put in this category that are so personable and let their emotions show for the industry. And it's a very inclusive industry. Mm-hmm. My wife did not grow up in agriculture, but through my Florel research years, Brian, she would man the booth at the trade show while I was speaking on the educational program. Yeah. And her comment at the end of the day, when we'd sit down for dinner, her comment was always the same. There's so many nice people around here. And her career has been in banking and customer service. And she has stories about the other type of person that is always complaining, yelling, and screaming. But it is, agriculture is rooted with good, strong people, individuals. And I've been really pleased to see that that's not just the grower segment. That is everybody that's involved in the industry. And I can remember exactly the short course where you introduced yourself to me a number of years ago, over a decade ago. I might not know the number of the aisle in the trade show that it was, but I remember specifically you coming and introducing yourself and how many times we've each been recipient of that in our careers. And it just builds that network. And it ends up bringing the three of us here together today. Each of us has our own podcast, but that's not a wall between us. It's more of a bridge between us.
Well, and as you go to a show like Cultivate, or really any of the other industry shows, and you can learn in a classroom, you can learn by talking to somebody at their booth. But a lot of people say, and I agree, you'll learn the most just walking through the trade show aisle or sitting down and getting a cup of coffee outside. And somebody sits down, next thing you know, you're having a conversation about, what you're dealing with. Oh, I'm dealing with kind of the same thing. And, we're both in the same world together. Peter, I know you mentioned, the individual parts of this industry. And that's another one, I think, one of my favorite things that we do is we have at Cultivate is our Evening of Excellence program. And it's all about recognizing innovation, excellence, and leadership from across the industry. We give a couple of grower awards away, and then we recognize innovative plant breeders, and just to be able to bring all those folks into one room and to really see their reactions, especially if we call their name and they're the winner, and having get up on stage and be recognized by their peers and being able to really help tell their story. It's always something really special.
It is. It is. Absolutely.
We keep going back to large and small growers. So I'd say most of the folks we've had on the podcast have been from bigger operations, but just in one of our recent episodes, I talked to somebody who's with a 1-acre cut flower farm in St. Louis, and just her story was just incredible. Just, she came from the East Coast and came to St. Louis, and her and her business partner wound up taking over a very small greenhouse that had been abandoned and been vandalized, and they turned it into a vibrant part of the community. So those types of stories, I love being able to hear those stories and be able to share those stories with others.
I enjoyed that one as well. And it touches on so many things, right? This coming at the business from a different angle, the using on making assets more valuable in the community, being part of the community, but also just where cut flowers are right now. And I was visiting Farm Foundation a couple weeks ago in Chicago, and we sat there talking about a farmer with a conventional farm and gave his daughter, I believe, an acre to play with cut flowers, and she's making more money than the entire farm. Every operation is different, and I'm not telling every, you know, row crop farmer to get into cut flowers, but there's this resurgence of cut flowers and interest in having it around, and agrotourism, and not just you pick, but it's you cut flowers. It's not just corn mazes, but it's sunflower mazes. And so there's this real connection point and change in the industry. So we might hold on to more pandemic gains than I think people were concerned about.
Well, how many times, Michelle, have you heard me say a plant is a plant is a plant? There's really no difference to crossover between edible crop and an ornamental crop. As far as growing the crop, there's not much difference.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Well, Brian, we want to thank you again for joining us, and congratulations on podcast and venturing into new spaces. We encourage our listeners to listen to your podcast and vice versa, and we'll all pull the cart in the same direction forward.
Yeah, I mean, we love listening to yours too. I mean, you know, again, being able to make that connection between doing the growing side of the business and doing the business side of the business. You have to be able to, you have to have skills in both of them, or it's not going to work.
Well, thank you so much. I will include links to your podcast in the show notes. Any final thoughts before we let you go?
No, I mean, I'm glad we're having this conversation. You know, I mean, part of it, I'll say part of the inspiration was seeing what two of you can do, have done, and knowing that there's an audience for that. And just, you know, again, always looking for different ways to tell the story of what's happening in the industry. And I think the podcast platform in general is one that's, I think it's just going to keep growing. And, you know, the more information you can share. And again, it goes back to that personal touch, that personal conversation. It's just a completely different way to share information.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Grower and The Economist. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate it wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps us get discovered by new listeners. If you have questions, concerns, or would like to suggest a podcast topic, please email me at michelle@strataderm.com. I love hearing from you. Until next time.